हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
सी दिस् टेक्स्ट्बुक् उपदेशसारम् उपदेशः मीन्स् टीचिङ्ग् देशः मीन्स् वन् मीनिङ्ग् आफ् द वर्ड् देशः मीन्स् युर् कण्ट्री इसन्ट् इट् नेशन् इन् फ्याक्ट् दिश् इस् द रूट् दिशति मीन्स् डैरेक्ट् वै नडत्तु दिशति अण्डर्स्टाण्ड् वै नडत्तु न दिशति डैरेक्ट् and upa is a prefix upadishati directs being near remaining closely that which directs what is that which directs you correctly being with you is the knowledge isn't it and that which gives that knowledge which directs you with you remaining with you is the teaching So, upadeshaha means teaching which will result in knowledge or understanding which will guide you, direct you correctly. What a long meaning. Look at this. It's called upadishati. Upadishati teaches. So, upadeshaha teaching. Why I have to tell you this meaning? Because in Tamil language, upadeshaha, we always think advice. It's not advice, okay? Advice means you say and then you leave it. Upadeshaha is teaching here. And then, teaching of what? Teaching of what says saram. Saraha, saram means essence. Teaching of the, essence. Essence of what is understood? Essence of the Shastra. Teaching of the essence of Shastra is Upadesha Saram. It gives you in a nutshell the essential teaching. Isn't it? The book which gives you the essential teaching in a nutshell is called Upadesha Saram. And these verses Actually, they all which are in Sanskritam have been, were written by Ramana Maharishi, being requested by one of his close associates called Muruganar. Ramana Maharishi wrote these verses. How did he write? Why did he write this? Ramana Maharishi had the vision. And he was simply sitting. He never wrote much, never thought much, never talked much. Simply sitting there. And being requested by his one of the close associates, like disciple-like person, almost a disciple, who always lived with him. Now, who, on his request, Ramana Maharishi just wrote these verses. Because Ramana Maharishi wrote these verses, the book, the Upadesha Sarami, became very popular. And why did Muruganar asked, why did Muruganar ask Ramana Maharishi to write this? There's a context. Because Muruganar was a great scholar, a Tamil scholar, a poet, and a very profound scholar. A man of great depth of understanding. And he wrote many, he translated many Puranas, the legends into simple Tamil in his own language. And always Ramana, he was also big, very highly evolved person. Ramana always appreciated, respected this Muruganar as a great scholar and all that. And he happened to write the story in the form of poetry of some ascetics who lived in Dharukavanam, a place called Dharukavanam. Dharukavanathin Tapasvihal. Okay, Dharukavanam is a name of a place. Vanam is a forest, you know that. Dharukavanam is a name of a place. And there is a legend which talks about the story of this the rishi, the saints of tapasvis of Dharukavanam. Ascetic means a tapasvi. Tapasvi means what? The tapasvi is the one who has tapas. What is tapas? Commitment. One who is focused and committed to his pursuit is a tapasvi. We have to be very clear. Tapas means being committed and remaining focused, being focused and being committed to one's own pursuit. Suppose you are a tapasvi. Suppose if your knowledge in medicine is unshakable, means what? You can say the tapas is there. Being focused and committed to one's own pursuit is tapas. Ondril mulhi iruthal, illa mulhu manalod iruthal is called tapas. Tapasya. Like that, there are many tapasvis. Many ascetics. And who were living in the Dharukavanam. And these tapasvis, the story goes like this. The tapasvis of Dharukavanam were very much given, very focused and committed means to all the karmakanda of the Veda. They're focused on studying the karmakanda of the Veda and performing rituals. And because they're all very disciplined people, they're all blessed. The commitment to the karmakanda and the performance of rituals, the disciplined life, all of them really blessed them with lots of powers. You know, the Siddhi powers, they have lots of powers, supernatural powers. They were more than ordinary human beings. That means what? Because of tapas, of performing rituals, and pleasing devatas, and the disciplined clean life, they were really blessed with powers. And what happened? The more and more they performed rituals, and more and more they understood karmakanda of the Veda, the more they performed rituals, the more powers they had. And they became addicted to those powers only. They became more and more addicted. The more power they got, the more and more powers they wanted. They got addicted to those powers. Then the ultimate end became accomplishing powers. Oh, I got this much power, I want to become more powerful. The more power they enjoyed, they want to become more powerful. That means the thirst for powers never came to an end. Okay, when they didn't have any powers, they were working hard for getting powers. They got some powers, they worked again hard to become more powerful. They became more powerful, still they continued to be inadequate and small. They continued to be, again felt not enough. So again they want to have more powers. This is how they were doing. And what happened? They were praying more and more, and the Lord Shiva, it seems, the story goes like this. Lord Shiva thought, we should make them really, understand. What is this? There's no end for this. And they are so engrossed in karma and so engrossed in getting more powers, and they think powers will get them everything. They do not see the limitations of powers. So we have to really teach a lesson. Okay, now they need some lesson. So what he did, he himself came down to Dharukavanam as a simple ascetic, as another sadhu, and as the form of sannyasi. Lord Shiva came as a sadhu, as saffron robes, a puny little small sadhu came there, asking for bhiksha. And before even he came, he had discussion with his brother-in-law, Lord Vishnu. Always brother-in-law join together, They were very good. Brothers-in-law get together to get them. Brother-in-law, sister's husband is Vishnu, isn't it? So he had a discussion with him. That people think whatever they think about us, but we are very good friends. You always do things together sometimes. Why don't you go? You are Mayavi, okay? You are very clever. Why don't you go in the disguise of a woman? You can do wonders. So he was sent by Lord Shiva as a Mohini, okay? Mohini to those people, place. In fact, all these people, the ascetics, there was a place where ascetics all got together and they're seriously involved, you know, in gaining more, doing some rituals, to do more powers. They planned everything and they were going to start their big ritual, big karmas to gain more powers. And there Lord Vishnu went there. You know, Lord Vishnu went in the form of a Mohini. As a Mohini she went. And my God, not like he went there, the Mohini started singing also. In a beautiful woman goes itself is enough. And music means what? And music is again, you know, this is why music is always enchanting, isn't it? Always tempting and then really it will take our minds away. And then what happened? The music also. And they heard the voice. This Mohini was very clever. Just made her available for them to see. Okay? She was available. They could see her, but they could not really get very close to her. And then her voice also was very beautiful. The sweet song was coming and they could hear. Then they started following. They left the karma. They left the performance. They stopped that work. Okay? Stopped the ritual. And they could not just continue. They just want to see who this beautiful woman singing in a beautiful voice. Let us go following her. Okay? Then they came following her. They came following. And yes, she was going ahead. And then they were taken. Okay? They just went after her. And then they were taken to a very far off distance, okay? Then what happened? Suddenly the Vishnu Mohini disappeared. And they felt, my God, look at this, we came so far. It will take very long again for us to go back to our place where we started, okay? And then now she disappeared. We don't know, they couldn't find her at last. They couldn't find her. Where is she? Where is her music? Where is the song? We can't find her. And that too, in a place where they couldn't even know how to get back. Somehow they managed to get back and they understood. Now it is too late to worry or think about what has happened. Now our tapasya has been disturbed and distracted. In the sense what? Our commitment, our focal attention was disturbed and distracted. Now even if we go back and do the karma, it will not be effective. See, karma has been, okay, stopped. And not only that, then they thought, then because of the previous tapas, previous karmas, they had some powers. Then they thought, they were just coming back. And what happened? Why it has happened? Still they couldn't find out. Then they were coming back and they came back to their houses. Then they understood, all tapasvis were all married people, okay? They were very highly evolved in terms of tapasya, commitment and discipline, all those things. But still, they're not that mature in terms of recognizing their purushartha nischaya. So what happened? They came back. All their houses were vacant and then no tapasvi's wife was at home. What happened to all their wives and the family members? Because then they could understand the Shiva who came in the form of the sadhu, sannyasi, who went to their houses for bhiksha, because he looked so handsome and nice also. And they didn't do anything wrong. And he asked for alms and had such a sweet voice. My God, this tapas, this sadhu, not only he looks so, this the brilliance was such, this just, when he took the bhiksha, he just walked out. All the women went behind them. When the sadhus came back and saw in their houses, what happened to our wives now? Then at least using their powers, they could make out what happened to their wives. Oh, all these wives, they had gone after this sadhu. But they could not make out was Shiva. See this limitation of power, understand now. They could see one sadhu coming, asking for alms and going away, taking alms. And behind the sadhu also looked nice. Very attractive and then handsome person and with a beautiful voice and all that, sweet voice. And they also could see that women, all their wives together, going after these women, went after that Mohini. All the women went after this Shiva, the sadhu. They thought, oh my God, they're so angry with this sadhu. This sadhu, you see, he's in the form of a sadhu, sannyasi, and he came for alms, and how come that he could take away the wives? So he should be killed. He should not be allowed, you know, to be alive anymore. So what they used their powers, and with their tapasya, the shakti, they could have created one tiger. They created also one elephant. They sent that elephant and tiger, you know, to kill that sadhu. And what happened? Effortlessly, Shiva killed those two animals, you know, and he wore that, the skin of the animals. He, in fact, as his robes, okay, he wrapped his body with the skin of those animals. And that is when, and they tried again, and then they again with their own powers, because of the powers they have earned through their other rituals, and they created again a snake. They brought a snake. Look at this. Even they had some power. They could just bring into existence one snake, very powerful, poisonous snake, and they sent it towards Lord Shiva to kill Shiva. The snake went and just got on his neck, became his ornament. That's why Shiva is called Pannaga Bhushana. Understand now? Pannagaha means you know, one who gets in the gachati the Pannagaha, one who crawls. You see, you know? The Pannagaha is one of the names of the snakes. Pannagaha, Uragaha, Sarpaha, we have so many words. And Pannagaha. So Pannaga Bhushanaha means one who has Pannaga snake as his ornament. He has bhajan, no? Simple bhajan. Remember that bhajan.
Pannaga Bhushana Paramashiva Parvati Nandana.
We have that bhajan, no? The Pannaga Bhushana is very simple bhajan, kindergarten bhajan, all of you used to sing it. So what I'm saying here, this Shiva is called Pannaga Bhushana. No, Pambai Abanamaha Kondavan is called Pannaga Bhushanaha. Pannagaha eva bhushanam yasya. So Pannaga Bhushanaha. So that also became his ornament. Then they realized the limitation. My God, we cannot send any more poisonous or powerful thing to kill this asset, this sadhu. Then they realized the limitation of their powers. See how many ever rituals we performed, how many ever karmas we did, how much have we learnt about the karma, how much of our powers we are endowed with. Now, to ordinary person, you can kill an ordinary person with your powers. But there is always something which is more powerful, understand, which you cannot undo. This is how Shiva, Lord Shiva, made them realize, made them understand the limitation of their powers. Any amount of powers one has, still those powers are limited. If they have their own limitations, there are things which the powers cannot help one accomplish. Because their earning, the craving for powers itself is for, because that the how much of powers you have accomplished, still the innate, it does not remove the inadequacy. Does not remove the inadequacy or any that which causes the inadequacy also. This is where they understood, and they approached this sadhu, and then they asked for forgiveness, and then they asked him to instruct. Understand? Come on, O Lord, now we have realized our limitations of the powers, limitations of karma and karma phalam. So now please bless us with knowledge of that, which will help us accomplish the limitlessness. We know any amount of power will be a limited thing. Understand, it will not make us a limitless being. Still we are limited individuals, limited beings only. So please teach us that, by knowing which we'll become free from limitations. This, so possession of these these powers will not free us from limitations. We continue to be limited. We are still limited beings only. That was the prayer he had. And these sadhus, these ascetics prayed to Lord Shiva in the form of sadhu. Then Lord Shiva also agreed to teach them. So whatever the teaching Lord Shiva taught, no, what this Lord Shiva gave to these ascetics, so Dharuka Vana Tapasvi Nam Krute Krutam Sik Patanam. So the teaching, the essence of the Shastram done by Lord Shiva himself to the Tapasvis. Lord Shiva himself played a role of a teacher. And all these Tapasvis of Dharuka Vanam, ascetics of Dharuka Vanam became Sishyas. And so till here, this is a whole story like this. This legend of Tapasvis of Dharuka Vanam was written in simple terms, was written in by this Muruganar in his own words in Tamil. Then he requested Ramana Maharshi to write from this part. Come on, the teaching of Shiva to the Tapasvis, why don't you write? Understand? So he wrote the whole story of the Tapasvis of Dharuka Vanam in simple Tamil, in his own poetry, because he was a poet. He wrote in his own poem, in the form of poetry. In Tamil, he wrote everything. So when he wrote the story, the whole story, of course I made it very short, because we are interested in teaching, isn't it? So I made it very short, because there's a big description of what happened and all those things. I didn't go into the details. So the story Muruganar wrote in Tamil, okay, and in the form of poetry. Then when the context of the Shiva's teaching had to begin, now came the context of Shiva's teaching came. Then he requested Ramana Maharshi, now here let me keep quiet. Why don't you write? And because Muruganar's request, because Ramana always acknowledged Muruganar as a great poet and all that, great Tamil scholar, he agreed to write. And he wrote in Tamil. He wrote in Tamil. Upadesharam, he wrote in Tamil first. And in the Tamil meter called Undi Para. Undi Para. Undi Para is the name of the meter in Tamil. There's so many meters. I don't know much of Tamil literature, but we know there are many meters in Tamil. And one meter, poetic meter, no, the meter used in writing poetry is called Undi Para. So Ramana Maharshi used that meter and he wrote this Upadesha Saram. Undi Para?
Maybe just pass it, one second and pass it. That's why Sarasava printed the whole thing.
Oh, Sanskritam.
No, the same thing, but
okay. Yeah. Now, I'll try to get in Tamil also. You will all love, because other class I can't teach. And it's called Undipara, and I used to come and I used to recite as a child. Now, with that knowing meaning, I used to recite it. And then
you can tell us the first verse in Tamil.
Yeah, yeah. I try to get it, because I used to do the melody. I remember the melody, the words. Okay. And what happened later on, and somehow Ramana Maharshi himself translated his own Upadesharam, which he wrote as part of Muruganar's work, the teaching. This is just the teaching alone in Tamil. He himself translated that into other languages such as Telugu, Malayalam also is there. Malayalam, Telugu, and also other, one more language, I don't remember. And this other Mahatma who was the associate Nashtra inmate there, he requested him to write in Sanskritam. That is when particular teaching, Upadesha Saram, was written in Sanskritam, what we have now. This is the context of Upadesha Saram. Anyway, the teaching is very important. So from the context of the Upadesha Saram, you can understand the very teaching is to emphasize, now, that this fullness, I don't want to use the word moksha or happiness now, the fullness or limitlessness, niraivu, Tamil word, okay, that is something choiceless end. Niraivai thedi, we always like this, no? We niraivu is the fullness is some choiceless end. And that fullness, the niraivu, is not at all something which can be accomplished. It can never be accomplished, never be attained as a result of an action. Understand? Why? Because anything attained will leave you, subject to get lost. அடையப்பட்ட எந்த ஒன்றும் உன்னை விட்டு நீங்கக்கூடியது. Once you have got it, once anything you attain will leave you and go away, subject to get lost, subject to depart. And the niraivu, the fullness that is sought choicelessly, is not something which is to be lost. Which we say it is to be, it has to be there forever, eternal. That means definitely it cannot have beginning also. It cannot have beginning. The fullness what you are seeking, the happiness what you are seeking, choicelessly, the limitlessness, the niraivu, is something which cannot have beginning, cannot have end, which cannot change. That means it is eternal, which is something already there. If it's something beginningless, then it's already there. If something which is already there, accomplishment of niraivu is only in terms of knowing, not really. No, it's only to be known, it is not to be gained as a result of karma. This is the main teaching. And why? Because karma, when you say any action, action itself is what? It's a time bound in nature. What is the nature of karma? If you see, it's a time bound in nature. Any karma, any action, whether it's one action or one action consisting of many units of action. Many units of actions together constitute one action. Suppose we say worship. Worship is one action consisting of many units of actions. Waking up in the morning, having bath, having shower, then wearing fresh clothes, muddy. Then I'm going to the puja room and taking the and cleaning everything there and oil, lots of things put together. Similarly, cooking, if you say one action, many units of action together constitute one act of cooking. Going to the kitchen, taking the ingredients, deciding what to cook, the recipe, menu, everything had decided. Then we had to take everything and put the pan and cook, all these things. So many units of actions constitute one action. So every action is what? Time bound in nature. There is a beginning, there is an end. Therefore, a time bound action cannot produce timeless, everlasting niraivu, the fullness. This is simple logic, isn't it? Kala varairaikku utpatta seyal, கால ஒரே வரையறைக்கு உட்படாத நிறைவை எப்படி தோற்றுவிக்க முடியும்? How can this time bound action result bring about everlasting, timeless fullness or happiness? It is not possible. And now we have understood the niraivu, this fullness is something which is everlasting. If it has to be everlasting, it cannot have beginning. If it does not have beginning, that way it is eternal. If it is eternal, it is already there. If it is already there, then if I do not have what is already there, it's only my not knowing what it is. Therefore, ignorance alone distances me from what I'm seeking. In the knowledge alone will resolve the distance, thereby to own up that nirevu which is already there. But where it is, how to know it, God teaching, isn't it? And similarly, therefore, action cannot produce. Action does produce a result. A result or the fruit of an action is produced, whereas nirevu is not something product, it's not produced. Anything produced will have beginning and end, isn't it? Product, when you say produced, means there was a time when it was not, there will be a time when it will not be, there's a time when it is. Whereas fullness is something beginningless, endless, isn't it? Therefore, karma cannot produce. We have to be very clear. At the same time, does it mean that I should not do karma at all then? That's also not right. So non-performance of action will not take any distance from where you are. Understand? That means it will not remove your ignorance of what fullness is. So performance of action also will not remove, is not opposed to action. Therefore, it will not remove ignorance. Performance of action is not opposed to ignorance. Therefore, performance of action will not remove ignorance of what fullness is. Non-performance of actions also will not remove ignorance. Only knowledge will remove ignorance. Therefore, should you do karma or not? Therefore, if you do not do, you are not going to achieve anything. But if you do the karma with the proper attitude, now then that karma can prepare you for knowledge, which alone can remove ignorance. Because knowledge is opposed to ignorance. Therefore, he begins his teaching like this. And he just says, because he wants to start the text now with auspiciously. And always anything should be with auspicious beginning. So he just wants to use the word Ishvara, first Lord. So he just says, he begins, Karta. Here Karta means not the doer here, as a creator, as the Lord, he says. Okay? So just read the text now.
कर्तुराज्ञया प्राप्यते फलम् कर्तुराज्ञया प्राप्यते फलम् कर्म किं परम् कर्म तज्जडम् कर्म किं परम् कर्म तज्जडम्
आई थिंक यू हैव टू करेक्ट इट देयर कर्तुः सो दैट कर्तुराज्ञया. You may better write in Tamil. Tamil English, you can write it down. Because spelling is Karturagnaya. 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 Prapyate phalam. Karma. Next line, karma kim, karma kim param, enna bhashana theriyala, karma kim param, then karma tat jadam. And I know the verse by heart, karma kim param, karma tat jadam. So here Ramana Maharshi talks about the limitations of karma. What he says, and second thing, Kartu Ragyaya Prapyate Phalam. He just says that. First sentence, he begins with the word kartuhu. Kartur agnaya, if you put it, kartuhu agnaya. Karta means maker, a creator, the Lord here. So, padittavanudaya, kartuhu, padittavanudaya. Agnaya, agnayinal. Prapyate phalam. Phalam means fruit of an action, result of an action. Prapyate is attained. So, fruit or result of an action is ordained by, predetermined by the Lord. Ella selhudaya palangalum Bhagavanal, Irivanal, Nirnaikapadihindana. Nirnaikapattapal. No? Whatever has been ordained is attained as a fruit of action. Then next sentence is karma kim param. Kim karam, kim karma param. What? Is karma absolute? Is karma absolute? Karma kim param? Param, param na absolute. Is karma an ultimate end? Is the absolute end? Answer she understood. No. Karma had an absolute end. And he says, karma tat jadam. Karma is jadam. Karma is jadam. Karma is not the absolute. And karma phalam is ordained by the Lord. Karma phalam, whatever karma phalam is gained, attained, is ordained by the Lord. This is the literal meaning of the verse. So first he says, karma melanada. That's what they mean. Kim karma param? Is karma the absolute end? Is karma the nirevu? Is karma the limitlessness? Is karma the fullness? Is karma the moksha? Is that mean what? Does the performance of karma now relieve one from limitations? Can it bless one with fullness? Just the performance of action itself, now, can the performance or mere performance of any action or any amount of actions free one from limitations, will bless one with moksha? No, karma is not the absolute. Karma is not, performance of karma will not, no, will not really bless one with param. Param means the absolute. Absolute ultimate end. Uppatra melanadu is we say param. Karma will not. Why do we say that? I already explained to you. Because karma is time bound and param is, what is the absolute? Nirevu. Nirevu is the param. Limitlessness, fullness, happiness is the param, moksha is the param. And this mokshaha, which is the absolute end, param for us, can never be the result of, the fruit of an action which is time bound. And not only karma cannot produce, not only the performance of action cannot produce the phalam, the absolute, it is also jadam. Jadam, karma, jadam. Jadam, karma is inert. Karma is inert means why he uses the word inert here? Because why he explains the reason when Ramamurshi says karma is inert. Karma is jadam. The first line, karma kyum param, he says karma cannot produce a result which is the absolute end, moksha. Second thing, karma tat jadam, and he says, come on, karma itself is product of, expression of the ignorance being there. why there is karma. He explains what the nature of karma now. One line explains the nature of karma. What is karma? A karma is now, whether it is a physical activity, kayikam karma, or oral activity, vachikam karma, or thinking, manasam karma, the mental act, whether you think, thinking is a mental activity, and speaking is an oral activity, and whatever you do physically is what? Physical activity. Any of these actions, no physical, oral or mental actions, are always impelled by, prompted by the pressure of desire, something called a desire. Asayin undudaludaya velipade sayalna. Understand now? Always, what is that which prompts the actions? How can you do any action? You know, always it is expression of the pressure of caused by the desire. Listen, always action is impelled by and prompted by a desire. And in the case, therefore, if there is no desire at all, it is impossible, understand now, for the action to be there. Understand, action, desire means what? Any desire, any urge, natural urge or a cultivated desire. Understand? But natural urges are okay, because suppose even jnanis have natural urges sometimes. Now once you eat and you have to use the toilet, you have to drink water, the body is dharma, isn't it? But the cultivated desire also will cause a lot of pressure. Therefore, any action is impelled by the desire. And the next question comes, why there is desire? We don't say, nobody says anything wrong about having desires. Be careful, okay? You're only teaching here. Why there is a desire which now causes pressure, which prompts the actions, which really, no, which really impels desires. Impelled by what one acts, actions are, why there is desire which impels actions? A desire again is sort of, no, a thought which rises. The desire itself is sort of disturbance. Any desire is disturbance caused in the quiet mind. Listen now. So why there is desire? Any desire for anything is because of, no, the need one needs. Any need. There is some need or the other. Always some need or the other. The need means the must, without which it is not possible. Understand now? One cannot be at ease. One cannot be comfortable. One really disturbs the comfort. One doesn't allow one. One causes great. The need always causes discomfort. Where there is a need, there is discomfort. And to get off the discomfort, to become comfortable, immediately the need has to be fulfilled. Once the need is there, there's discomfort. That discomfort, you cannot stand discomfort. And immediately the discomfort has to be gotten off. So immediately the need converts itself in the form of desire. That's how the desire arises. Asai eppadi thondrugirathu. Look at this. We do not say asai vidun solala. Asai eppadi thondrugirathu. How something called desire arises, the thought. The Shastra's perspective of how desires come into being. The desires alone impel actions. The desires are impelled by what? By the, understand now, the discomfort. Desire to get rid of the discomfort caused by needs. Understand now. It is seen in the form of so many other desires. And why there is such a called need? Teva endra ondru yen irukkirathu. Understand now, why there is such a called need? Why, how can there be need? Which causes the pressure, no, of the pressure that the desire comes into being. And the need itself is because of, naturally, not created, there is a natural inadequacy, kurai. Okay, now there is a sense of inadequacy. Is there really kurai? Is there really inadequacy? There is no real inadequacy, but there is a sense of inadequacy, the sense of being inadequate. Okay, sense of inadequacy. Who created sense of inadequacy? Nobody. It's this naturally sense of inadequacy. There's no real kurai, but there is sense of inadequacy. There's there's a big difference in saying. There is sense of being, the sense of inadequacy is there. And because of which the needs are there. And because of which the pressure of pressure to get rid of the discomfort caused by the needs, and which results in the form of coming into existence of the disease, and which impel actions. Look at this. One is because of the other. It looks as though one or the other, all simultaneous. And why there is inadequacy, this is what we analyze in our Shastra class as the fundamental problem, isn't it? The common human fundamental problem. Why is it common? Common to all the human beings. No human being is exception from this problem. Like every head has headache, different days, but here, so every mind has a common problem. What is the common human fundamental problem? Of what now? From having the sense of being inadequate. And the sense of being endowed with sense of inadequacy. And that inadequacy is due to what? Why there is inadequacy? If there is nereva already, but there is inadequacy, the sense of inadequacy. That inadequacy is due to what? Remember that? Due to, you have to say this, that order. Let me see whether you remember the first of previous lessons. Inadequacy is, maybe till today, let me repeat those technical terms also, you can remember that. And inadequacy is due to the mistaking the body, mind, sense complex for the Atma, for the self. The non-self being mistaken for the self. Yeah. And the limitations of the non-self being superimposed upon the limitations of the non-self are mistaken for the limitations of the self. Limitations of the non-self are mistaken for the limitations of the self. Why there is a mistake? Why do we mistake? Yeah, that we intentionally do it. No, I simply want to mistake it. And we want to, nobody knowingly mistakes. I can just say no. They can't be mistaken, it's proper taking, isn't it? We mistake itself implies what? Error. There is error involved. What is that error? We mistake the limitations of the non-self for the limitations of the self. Why do we mistake that? Because we mistake the very non-self for this self. Mistake the non-self for this self. We perceive the non-self as the self. That means there is error in our perception of this self. So error, wherever there is error, there must be ignorance. Where there is no ignorance, where there is knowledge, error is not possible. Eppo namakku thappu pannuvom? Thappu ariyamaila pannuvoma, arivilla pannuvoma? Understand? Whenever there is error, error implies ignorance being there. If there is ignorance, there will be error. We can't say there is knowledge till there is error. No. Error is not at all possible in knowledge. Error is always possible only in ignorance. Understand? So error, this only, I tell you, it's all error. Erroneous, I tell you, self-perception. It's an error in perception of the self. I'm not even saying oneself, yourself, myself. Error in perception of the self. And not only that there's error in perception of the self, we do not even know that our perception of the self is erroneous. There's no way of correcting our error by ourselves. We do not know. We do not know. There's error in the perception of the self. Yeah?
What is the origin of ignorance and what was its purpose originally?
In fact, ignorance, that's why ignorance has no beginning. Ignorance has no beginning. In fact, the very question, this Shastram says, when the ignorance resolves, we just, that's why this thing, why did Bhagavan create this universe? People ask this question also, why did Bhagavan create this? Who said Bhagavan created this universe? Where is Bhagavan? Okay, whole Jagat is Ishvara, we had to say that. That is why, similarly, the ignorance is something which is there, naturally there. Ignorance is not created. Ignorance is not created by anybody. That is why I am saying natural. But the human mind has a capacity to understand this and to get rid of it. That is when the human life becomes a meaningful, successful life. That is why the life is lived for accomplishing something. It's a purpose, purposeful life. What is the ultimate purpose of living this human life? Now everything else becomes now. Everything else we do to live this life. But we live this life to accomplish a purpose. And what is that purpose? Anyway, let me tell you. So here, this is Shastram begins. Shastram does not condemn or find fault with us for being ignorant. No, Shastram does not say that. Shastram only tells us. See, it only makes us understand. That's why Shastram relieves you of great amount of guilt and hurt. There's no way of freeing yourself from guilt and hurt. Not really, all the bag, these packages you have, the big heaviness on the burden, on the part of the mind, everything, you can just be, relieved of everything, just by understanding the subject matter of the Shastra. There's no self, you are not all condemned. You have not said you are wrong or anything. Just it begins this like this. Come on, what you're searching is this fullness, and if it is eternal, which is beginningless, it's already there. If it's already there, if we still you do not have it means, and you're seeking it means that what is that distances you from that is only your ignorance. Understand? So that is that being naturally there. So ignorance is natural here. In fact, the fullness you are searching for and the self which you do not know are not two different things. Fullness and the self are one and the same. If you knew the self, then you would have already known the fullness. If you already knew what fullness was, then there's no problem. No problem would have been here now.
Why isn't it the other way around? Why couldn't all of us know our fullness rather than know our ignorance?
I was just going to ask, why can't they teach this in kindergarten from a class 1? So we'll all be happy from childhood without having problems.
That is why in India, once upon a time, there was a Brahmachari ashrama, okay, where people were young students, before you become 23, 20, and you were taught all the shastras, even though you don't attain self-knowledge by the time you become 23, at least you very purushartha nischaya you will have. That is why the grihastha ashrama, when they enter into grihastha ashrama itself, with so much of maturity, get married, there's a purpose. Life is lived with the purpose, the given purpose. That is why they had children, they raised them with a lot of love, this commitment between husband and wife, there's so much. Both of them knew everything. That is why there's a dharma. That's why sahadharma charini, sahadharma chari, the children were, everything. That's what I'm saying, that we don't know whether again we can get the same life in India. We have gone some very far ahead of elsewhere. We chased all over the world from there. And then, I don't know, how it became all those things. Anyway, That's how everything has changed, isn't it? That is why the culture we lived in India always, even though we did not study Shastram and all that, always they taught us pray and worship, everything is Bhagavan's prasadam, accept it, no, always. That's why they taught us all those things. The culture reflected the vision to some extent. And now we are also away from the culture. It's a tragedy, isn't it?
So even here, a lot of problems. We see mental health problems, children problems, school, in school and everywhere. It's all due to lack of this knowledge, which...
See, if it is, it doesn't go labeled as Hinduism, Hindu spirituality, it can be simply studied and understood as a fact, as how people study the facts in physics and mathematics, they can study this also. But there should be openness to accept this as a fact. That is not there. That's the problem. I tell you, that they will not do. At least you know, our own people don't do this, and let us leave it on other people. That is why somewhere we have to have. That is why I request now. People, I told all these people who run temples now, everywhere. The people are all running now. It's a high temp. People, high children are highly. The IQ is so high nowadays. The exposure to the life world is so different, and we were far, far, far behind when compared to their IQ of these days. Understand? So those children are very open. And they're very fast in grasping, understanding. They don't need repetition. And if we teach them the core Vishnu Shastram in a package, some under something, they start thinking. They're very good actually. All the temples should become center for teaching culture, at least some core Vishnu Shastram. You don't have to go study Shastra, Vedanta, Samstam, and then book after book and page after page. At least give them some core vision. So that will help them understand the concept of Lord, significance of worship, efficacy of prayer, this past, present, future, and how to live like karma yoga. This is enough. This will help them. They will do wonders. Our kids will do wonders. But I wish they do it. Anyway, we pray for the best. And that's why I say always pray for the children. All the suktams, if you take any suktam, the prayer is mainly for children also. Because we never live. For us, the progress always as a whole. We never anything settled. Nothing is secret. Okay, only for me, only for you. No, always for the whole family, whole society, the entire humanity. That is how we pray. Because we always understand, we live as a part of the whole. So our happiness is also dependent on the undisturbed society around. We pray for everything. That's why we pray for Sanno Astuddipade Sanchatushpade. Understand? We all for the auspicious of the cattle. All this Padapas. Padapaha means every tree is called Padapaha. One who drinks through the foot. Padapaha. Padayapati Padapaha. That's amazing. Very beautiful. We ask for the well-being of everything because we cannot be peaceful otherwise. That the tree be upset and unhappy, that all the birds be shot and every peace and happiness is disturbed. How can you be happy? Understand? How many used to tell us, people go and they will be walking in the garden and they'll go and as they walk and they talk, they pull the leaves like this. They'll pull sometimes the beautiful, the branch will be like this, hanging. They'll go and pull. Hamji will say, come here. If you pull your hair like this, how do you feel? You feel irritated, no? Mm-hmm. Same thing, we are not very sensitive and alert. Suppose somebody comes and pulls like this. How will you feel? You get irritated. Same irritation will be there for... I don't say you should not touch anything. And that is how that much sensitivity must be there. We are not very conscious of things. Anyway, what I'm saying here, this is how the Shastram begins like this. See, there's ignorance of, there's ignorance of what fullness is. And this ignorance of self also is there, naturally there. And the problem is this ignorance of ignorance, which is innocence, isn't it? You're ignorant of the ignorance. That is why you cannot even initiate, you cannot make any efforts to know also. You have to come to know of your ignorance and to make effort to get rid of the ignorance. And ignorance being naturally there, self-ignorance being there, naturally you miss, the non-self has to be mistaken for the self. This is what is, now thereby you see the non-self as the self. In your perception, non-self is the self. Because you do not know what this, you do not even know that something, self is something different. You do not even know there is something, there is self. You don't know what the self is, and you do not know that you do not know what the self is. And you happily look at this non-self as the self, non-self for the self. And it, your whole identity is completely with the self. Then what happens? All the limitations, the non-self has its own limitations. And it can't be otherwise. Every object in this universe has its own limitations. It has to have its own limitation. So all the limitations are superimposed upon this self. Then that is that erroneous self-perception alone results in what? No, results in looking at you as an inadequate person, a person of limitations. So the sense of being inadequacy, the sense of being inadequate itself is caused by the error in your perception. Error is caused by ignorance. See, what causes what? Look at this now. Ignorance is the root cause. We say ignorance is the root cause. Ignorance results in error. Erroneous self-perception. Error in perception of the self. And error in perception of the self results in, now, results in the sense of being in the sense of inadequacy. The sense of inadequacy causes, no, really, it results in needs. Needs cause the discomfort, therefore, the pressure is that the pressure of caused by that discomfort results in what? Desire. So, any desire for that matter. That's why you say the fundamental desire. Also, I talked about fundamental desire, no? That I want to be happy is a natural emotional urge, is it? And I want to live long happily is a fundamental desire. And we say all other desires we have. And all other desires prompt actions. And what do actions do? Look at this now. We had to go ahead one step now. What do actions do? That is why action. What is the root cause of the action being performed? Actions being there. Sayal endra ondru irupadarkke moola karanam enna? What is that? Ignorance, isn't it? Ignorance. If ignorance is not there, if there is knowledge, if there is fullness discovered and fullness, then inadequacy would have been resolved, needs would have been resolved. And then the needs being not there, desires cannot be there at all. The desires are not there, actions cannot be prompted and impelled. Understand now? Therefore, what is the root cause of the action? Action is ignorance born. Okay, moolataha. Moolataha ajnana jatam karma. If you analyze, even though actions are directly impelled by the desires, if you find out what is it which caused the desire? Oh, needs. What is it which caused the needs? Inadequacy. What is it? Why there is inadequacy? Because of limitations being, no, because of smallness or limitations being centered on I. What is the sense of, why there is sense of inadequacy? Because there is, because the non-self is mistaken for the self. Why, no? Why? Because there is ignorance. And it goes, why? Why there is ignorance? That we don't ask. Why there is ignorance, we don't ask. We stop there. And when the wake of knowledge, without being asked why there is ignorance, you will understand where is ignorance. That is the beauty. Amazing, isn't it? No, I have answered your question now. That's why Shastra, that's why in Sampradaya, we just keep on listening. We're asking questions. They say that because why? Sometimes because we get the answer, no? Why? For everything there's an answer why. But at one point you have to, can't ask why. why there is ignorance. Then when the wake of knowledge, ignorance will resolve and you will ask, where is ignorance? Understand? But this ignorance is natural, uncreated. Ignorance has no beginning, but ignorance has an end. It can be resolved. So that is why Abba had tell you one line, say karma jadam. Ramana says karma tat jadam. Why he says karma is jadam? Because karma is in fact product of ignorance. Karma is born of ignorance. Karma is impelled by desire, which is caused by the needs and the sense of inadequacy, which due to the erroneous the self-perception caused by self-ignorance. Ignorance-born karma is said to be jadam. I think because you have heard about this order many times, so you must be very clear now. I told in the class, the Sanskrit technical terms, remember that? Ajnanam, ignorance. And after ajnanam, I said, ajnanat, due to this ignorance, you mistake the non-self for the self. Mistaking the non-self for the self is called adhyasaha. Remember the technical term? Adhyasaha. Erroneous self-perception is called adhyasaha. And after adhyasaha, I just told you one more thing. The superimposition of the limitations of the non-self upon the self. Anatmavode kuregale, atmavode kuregalaha, etri parthal. Understand now? It's called adhyaropaha. Adhyaropaha. It's sort of hathabodha being, again repeated like. But in a different context, Ramana Maharishi's context, we see that. Adhyaropaha. So, ajnanam leads to adhyasaha. If you know the technical terms, easy. Ajnanam results in adhyasaha. Adhyasaha results in adhyaropaha. So, adhyaropaha results in ahankaraha. Ahankaraha is what now? Erroneous notion about the self. Ahankaraha, the notion, erroneous notion about the self. If you think I'm going to die one day. Why? Because body is going to fall apart one day. But you say, no, that because the self is going to die. Self has birth. Self has death. Self undergoes changes. This is called what? We say, erroneous notions about the self. It's called ahankara. Erroneous notions one has about the self. All the notions one has about the self is erroneous only. Ahankara. And these erroneous notions are what? Due to the ignorance, isn't it? So ahankara. So ajnanam, adhyasaha, adhyaropaha, then ahankaraha. These notions, therefore, also what? I am inadequate. Is also what? The notion, isn't it? I am insignificant, I am insecure, I am inadequate is a notion there. That's why inadequacy comes where? In ahankara, isn't it? So inadequacy being centered on I is what? Ahankara again. Sahankara. Sahankara results in what? Results in ahankara, results in asha, desire. I mean the needs and desires. Avashyakata and asha. Tamil ashai. Namastam asha. Avada. Then asha results in what? Karma. Karma. karma produces phalam. Now we say, Shankara reduces all of them together. He is all everywhere in Bhashyam. He will say, avidya, kama, karma. Avidya, kama, karma. Ignorance results in desire. Desire prompts actions. Avidya, kama, karma. Then, we have to say, therefore, karma is said to be what? Jadam. What big karma? What big karma? Is karma the absolute end? Is performing an action an absolute end? Do you think karma will produce the absolute end, moksha? No, karma tat jadam. Karma is jadam, born of ignorance. And ignorance is not opposed to karma. Understand? No, karma is not opposed to ignorance. So how many ever karma? Your problem here is, the fullness is already there. It is ignorance of what fullness is. Understand now? It really prevents you from being full, in fact, not really anything else. And as long as ignorance of fullness continues to be there, the inadequate sense of inadequacy will be there. It will not go. Why? Because, and how many ever karmas you do, how much karma phalam you earn also, that will not remove ignorance. Why? Because karma is not opposed to ignorance. In fact, karma is a product of ignorance. Therefore, karma is jadam. Karma tad jadam. And he's going to talk about in the next verse again very beautifully. And he says, therefore, karma is not good. Performance of karma will produce a phalam. And that phalam is definitely time bound. It can be artha. Okay, it can produce the phalam. In terms of artha, in terms of kamaha, but not definitely mokshaha. Mokshaha is not karma phalam, moksha is jnana phalam. Even the jnana phalam, we say, the karma kanda, if you study, okay, any amount of rituals, any karma you know, first you know how to do. The knowledge of karma is not enough. The knowledge of karma itself will not produce the result. You need to have the knowledge of karma, how to perform a karma, any karma. Thereafter you have to use that knowledge, you have to put into practice, you have to implement that knowledge in the form of performing. Then only the karma can produce phalam. Knowledge of karma will not produce a phalam. Knowledge of karma implemented in the form of action will produce a phalam. And karma itself being time-bound, then that karma phalam will only time-bound phalam. It can be anything within what? Artha kama dharma, not moksha. This is the limitation of karma. Karma kyum param, karma tajjadam. And he says, and second thing, karma cannot produce any phalam by itself. You know that? Let leave alone karma moksha. Why do you say that? Because karma performed as an individual, you are impelled by your desires to karma, you have choice in choosing to do a given action. But that's all. But the karma itself does not produce a phalam. You know that? The phalam is ordained by Ishvara. Phalam is ordained by Ishvara. He says that every karma, knowingly done, unknowingly done, intentionally, unintentionally, no, however it is done, karma definitely produces phalam. Means what? Phalam is ordained by the natural law, which is Ishvara. Understand? You have no choice about, you have no choice over results of action, fruits of actions. They are definitely ordained. Prapyate. No, I don't want. Karapalam. Who said you don't want? You can't say you don't want. You can't say I want also. You are just given. Prapyate. Understand now? Karma palam is produced. Karma palam is gained. Once karma is performed, okay, you have no choice about accepting the palam. Palam is prapyate. Palam is gained. The fruit of an action performed is definitely gained. but gained not as you wish, as ordained by Kartuhu Agyaya. Understand now? Kartuhu Agyaya Palam Prapyate. Whatever fruit of action is ordained by the Lord is gained by you. Whatever fruit is gained as a fruit of an action, as a result of an action, that is ordained by what? Kartuhu Agya. Understand now? Kartuhu Agyaya. Predetermined by, you know, the Lord. Which Lord? Lord in the form of universal, natural law and order. Universal, natural law and order. You know, one universal, natural law and order, and backed by the total knowledge. And that order alone is linked everywhere. That is why I was talking to Ragnarji about this big, you know, the Samashti Parada, the big accident which happened in Germany. One car hitting other car, one other car hitting other car. So many people simultaneously died in car accidents. So many cars got blown up together. And he says, oh, he says, how is it? He says, who's Parada? It's individual or the Samashti? I said, oh, Samashti. Now, people who all had that bad thing, know the Samashti Parada together, come together. Who that? Who brought them together and all that? Amazing, isn't it? That is why we say, Arasan Andru Kolvan, Devam Nindru Kolum, nobody can tie Bhagavan's eyes. Always you are watched. Manasakshi. Understand now? Witnesses, your own self, Bhagavan is there as the very self, witnessing all your thoughts and motives behind. And no, don't need to worry, okay? That is why everything will come. That is why nobody needs to be blamed also. Really, this is something to be understood. That is only way we can understand. But you can overcome all these things by jnanam. So, kartuhu agyaya phalam prapyate. Phalam, fruit of an action. Prapyate is gained. Agyaya, now by the agya. Irevinodaya agyayal phalamanadu perapadukirathu. Okay, the fruit of an action is gained as ordained. No, as the order of the Lord, in the form of universal law, natural law and order. Why? Because every action produces twofold phalam. One is drishtam phalam, one is adrishtam phalam. The seen result, the unseen result. What is seen result and unseen result? If you go through an action situation, which is, for which the cause is known, it is drishtam phalam. For a situation which you go through, for which the cause is unknown to you, you can't even comprehend what happened, why it has happened, how it has happened, the cause is unknown, then it is adrishtam. It can be adrishtam, you always think only of good luck. It's also bad luck, understand now. Adrishtam means what? Drishtam means seen. Adrishtam, unseen. What is unseen? Unknown. The situation you go through, if the cause is known to you, it is drishtam. The cause unknown, it is adrishtam. Every karma produces both results, drishtam and adrishtam. Understand? And adrishtam becomes what? Punyam or papam. The motive behind the action. Okay? And the whether the action is in conformity with dharma or not. So because you know the all the, you know, the natural laws, the universal laws, actually the universal laws are universal in content, relative in application sometimes. That is why the motive also is very important here. Relative in application means, what? Suppose you are walking on the road and then some in India young boys come riding the bike very fast. They come, they may just come and hit you down and see other person coming, you push it down and you may fall down. You escape the danger of being hit by the motorbike. At the same time, you might have got some small wounds here. Again, himsa. I caused himsa to you. But still, what is the motive is what? Like that, always it's relative in application. Universal values are universal in content, but still relative in application means, the motive also is, is motive behind the action also is involved in producing the adrishtam. That is why if the motive behind the action is in conformity with dharma. And the action done is in conformity with dharma. It is the right action which produces punya phalam. If the action is in action is the motive behind the action, or the action somewhere it is against dharma, it produces papam phalam, okay, which is papam. The punyam and papam are what, which are going to come in the form of pleasure and pain later on sometime. Understand now? Which is adrishtam phalam. And sometimes that's why sometimes we do not see the connection between the situation we go through and the action we did immediately. We don't understand adrishtam. Understand? So like this, we have both udrishtam and adrishtam. Phalams are produced by all the actions, and all these phalams are ordained by the natural laws. There, how many laws are there? If you sit and count, I tell you, we'll go mad. Okay, why? Because it is not countable. It is like we cannot count this number of stars. We cannot count the number of sand. Understand? Like we cannot count the number of laws also. Where are these laws? They are formless. Where are they existing? Everywhere. That is why wherever you go and live in any part of the universe, you will be blessed with the proper adequate result. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam tells, you know that Parikshit Maharaja thought, oh, if I'm going to be really bitten by the snake and die, let me create a nice glass house. Even those days, people thought of creating a glass house, okay? And let me live inside that glass house, so that no snake can crawl on the glass. Look at the Bhagavatam period, such a great thought was there. He won't escape, okay? At least he was such a big person. He was able to, see, because our science of astrology helped, to know what's Parabdha. What is in Parabdha? Okay? Somebody comes and says, hey, Parikshit. Understand? Come on. You are going to be bitten by snake one day and you are going to die. So he thought, okay, let me make a nice big glass house. Let me go and sit inside. So what happens? Kacha bhavanam. Okay? Then the snake cannot crawl there. Even the snake comes, he can make out. Understand? No, Bhagavan, the law, the snake has got into fruit. Went there. And so he want to attain moksha before the death really comes. He want to know immortality of the self. That is where the whole Bhagavata story came into being. Understand? No? Amazing. Whole Bhagavatam he heard in 7 days' time. That means he understood the Bhagavan bring the whole, the glory, the whole Jagat is Bhagavan's glory. He understood that. And he understood where is the non, where is the I, where is Anatma, where is Jivatma, where is, all that is there is only Paramatma Bhagavan. All that is, the whole Jagat is Bhagavan's glory. Bhagavad Vibhuti, he understood, he attained moksha. Understand? But still what I'm saying here, even then, the prarabdham, nobody can escape. Because prarabdha phalam is what? Ordained by the law. Because that law is Ishvara. Where is it? Doesn't matter. There is no place where the law is not. And then that is why the law is all pervasive. The universal natural law and order constituent of innumerably countless laws and laws which determine the results of fruits of actions immediately as the reaction of the action. Now in physicist language they might say differently, but still it's the same thing they also say in their own words. Understand? And we have here, and that every law is Ishvara for us. That's why we say law is Ishvara. Law is non-separate from Ishvara. Oh, law Niyati vera, Irevan vera kadaya. Understand now? The reality, the pure knowledge alone is in the form of every law, in the form of everything. Therefore, everything in Ishvara means law also is Ishvara. Therefore, law ordained fruits are Lord ordained fruits. Kartuhu agyaya prapyate phalam. Do you have any say over that phalam? No. Why he says that? Karma does not produce even that phalam which comes as a fruit of an action, which follows the karma. The whatever fruit which follows the karma also is ordained by the natural law, which is Ishvara. Even the time-bound phalam is ordained by Ishvara only. Therefore, what to talk of the timeless moksha? Karma can never produce a, understand now, timeless moksha. As for karma kim param? Karma jadam. Karma is born of ignorance. And he is going to explain that as long as you perform karma, karma will produce phalam. All that the karma can do is, karma will definitely be followed by fruits ordained by the natural law. In keeping with the intensity, in keeping with the motive, in keeping with the, you know, the conformity with dharma or not, in keeping with how the karma is performed, with what attitude is performed, it is definitely, the fruit is ordained by Ishvara. After every karma is followed by result ordained by Ishvara. No karma ever goes without producing a result. And that karma, how much of phalam it produces, it will not destroy ignorance at all. Ignorance will be there, undisturbed. Understand, that means what? Does not say Ishvara, this only says what you need to do is, and karma will produce phalam. Once the phalam comes, you have to see the next thing. Once the phalam comes, phalam has to be exhausted. Phalam has to be enjoyed. The fruit of the action has to be enjoyed. No, I don't want to. No choice. Ordained. Understand? No. The fruit has to be enjoyed. Once you enjoy, to enjoy the fruit means karma, avidya, kama, karma. So, and then no, because life gets over. The phalam is still there. In a phalam, a lot of fruits, lots of the prarabdha exhausts, only one portion of prarabdha you have, the prarabdha you have exhausted, which is only one portion of sanchitam. So life comes to an end. We cannot say, but now, while exhausting the prarabdha phalam, again you have lived the whole life doing karma, you have accumulated lot of again adrishtam, which is agami, isn't it? Agami is going to be there. So what agami phalam is there? So agami phalam is there, which has to be choice, inevitably exhausted and enjoyed by you. Therefore, for which, okay, the janma is necessary. Phalam is there. Therefore, that's why karma phalam, for the sake of exhausting the phalam, there is inevitably janma. Avidya, kama, karma, phalam, janma. That's why birth. That's why karma continues to keep you in bondage, in the cycle of births and deaths, which is called samsara sagaraha. Understand? Karma, performance of karma, merely performing karma, will continue to keep you in ignorance. Thereby, it will produce a phalam, and phalam has to be exhausted, and for the sake of exhausting the phalam, prarabdha ends, this life comes to an end, again you have only sanchitam, agami, understand now? Again, another next portion has to be exhausted. For that sake, you have to be born again. See, every time you are born, just to exhaust you, what to... No. We don't intend to accumulate in you. We are just born, kadana theepi kudukala vandam. Understand now? Again, we make new debts. Now we make new debts, we exhaust the old debts, and then we again accumulate. New mortgage begins, okay. Again, so new thing begins. So this is how we say endless. Understand? As karma, it is quite comfortable in ignorance. And then it produces phalam. So avidya, kama, karma, phalam, janma. The janma, again once you are born, karma, phalam. Understand now? Janma, karma, it like continues. That is why samsara sagaraha. So unless and until knowledge takes place, unless and until ignorance is removed, dispelled, there is no way of getting out of this, escaping this, okay, coming out of this, overcoming this ocean of, you know, life of transmigration, samsara. Therefore, he says, kartuhu agyaya phalam prapyate. He want to begin, you know, with some auspicious utterance, so he want to use the word Bhagavan. So, kartuhu. Kartuhu not as a doer here, but as a Bhagavan. Kartuhu agyaya phalam prapyate. Kim karma param? Tat jadam. This is the first verse. And he is going to say that, the second thing he is going to say, talk about it. Karturagyaya prapyate phalam.
Karturagyaya prapyate phalam.
Karma kim param karma tajjadam.
Karma kim param karma tajjadam.
Kriti mahodadau patana karanam.
Kriti mahodadau patana karanam.
Phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam.
Phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam.
Kriti mahodadau patana karanam.
Kriti mahodadau patana karanam.
Phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam.
Phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam.
Kriti mahodadau patana karanam. He says, I want it. No? Now this karma, he says, he talks about karma. Why? Just he wants us to make efforts to know. Now, he's going to talk about, he's going to make it very clear the next verse. I'm not saying not to do karma, but understand limitation of karma. Make efforts to know, attain knowledge. But to attain knowledge, you have to be ready. And for that, you have to do karma. How you should do karma? We will talk about karma yoga next verse. Very beautiful. See, Ramana Maharishi's vision is not understood by people. He does not say simply ask the question, who am I? He just goes, this very teaching goes by the Vedantic tradition. What Veda does, the presence karma kanda initially, no? And later on, jnana kanda. And karma kanda is so big. Why? Because so ends are so many. If in terms of karma phalam, if you count the ends, artha, kama, dharma, if you count the ends, what all you want, is there any limit? Endless fruits we want, endless we want. There's so many innumerable ends we have. Therefore, karmas are many, because ends are many. And so now, what we need to accomplish in terms of artha, kama, dharma, ends are many, many, many. Therefore, karmas or performance of rituals also what now? Actions are many. That is why to do different types of karma for different phalams in different ways, you need a big okay, knowledge also so much. So it's a big portion. When you come to Kushoka, the Vedanta comes, last port. How many ends? Moksha. And then it is not something to be attained after jnanam. Nothing to be implemented. Knowledge of the self itself is moksha, isn't it? Happiness, fullness and atma are one and the same. Therefore, nothing needs to be implemented. In karma kanda, you have to study, understand, know, then implement the knowledge to get the phalam. Whereas here, knowledge itself is fruit. The means itself become the end. And me end is what? Fullness. So what is that you need? Knowing the fullness itself. Listen, end is one. Means is only one means. Which are identical. That is why Vedanta, no, very very few pages. End portion of Veda, because end portion of Veda is such a small portion. Doesn't consist of many pages and bulky, no, voluminous portion. Anyway, so he says, this karma, not only it cannot produce any phalam, it's always followed by result ordained by the Lord in the form of law. And this karma being time-bound cannot produce a timeless moksha, and not only it cannot free you, it will continue to keep you comfortably in samsara. Understand now? He says here, kriti mahodadhav patana karanam. Kritihi means action again. Maha udadihi. Udakam means water. You know that? Udadihi means ocean, kadal. Maha udadihi, perunkadal. Okay? Big ocean. Endless ocean. Maha udadihi. And what is maha udadihi? Kriti maha mahodadihi means ocean of actions. Ocean of actions means ocean of samsara. Why ocean of samsara is said to be ocean of actions? Because the ocean of samsara is well maintained by performance of actions. Ocean of samsara is big. Ocean of samsara means what? This beginningless, endless cycle of continuous cycle of births and deaths. Always is well maintained, perfectly maintained by what? By the law of karma. Understand now? How it is maintained? You perform an action. As long as ignorance is there, all these problems caused by ignorance will be there, and as a result of which there will be always desires. Okay? That's why this is said to be what? Dushpuraha analaha. I told even Gita class, remember that Dushpuraha Analaha. Listen now, insatiable fire means the fire which can never be extinguished or put off. Always it is kept alive. Life fire. Understand now. Anakkappada mudiyada thi. Pondrada aase. Understand now. This is why insatiable fire is what? This desire. It's always live and fresh, ready to catch and burn anything. But the desire is always there like that. Why? Because being the product of ignorance. And the desire always impels actions. The actions will be followed by fruits. And the fruits have to be exhausted, for which you need to be born again. Therefore, samsara chakram. Understand now? Dharma chakram. It's called dharma chakram. Sarma samsara chakram. Why? Because perfectly well maintained. This is going on. It's kept alive. Understand now? It's kept fresh. Kriti mahodadhav, and then patana karanam. You are caught up in this cycle of births and deaths, and then you have fallen into that. It becomes the performance of actions, producing results. It not remove ignorance. Thereby, it becomes cause for the fall into the ocean of samsara. Understand now? Kriti mahodadhihi means ocean of samsara here. The samsara which is maintained by the performance of actions and the results. Therefore, it is called kriti mahodadhihi. And the patana karanam. Samsara sagarathil vizhuvadarku karanamagirathu. Understand now? Patanasya karanam. Why have we fallen into this ocean of samsara? First, how did they fall into this ocean of samsara? Understand now? A kriti mahodadhihi, understand now? Always you have balance. See, you have to pay back. That's why you are continuously there. Kriti mahodadhav patana karanam. See, therefore this karma is what now? In fact, karma becomes the cause for one to continue to be in this ocean of samsara. Wherein you have to choicelessly be doing karma, choicelessly be enjoying the fruits, reaping the fruits of actions. Thereby choicelessly you have to be born again to exhaust the phalam, fruits of actions. Understand now? Choicelessly. You have to understand this word. Choicelessly be coming again and again and again. That is why samsara sagare patanasya karanam. Patana means falling. The performance of karma becomes cause for your fall into this ocean of samsara. Once you have fallen means what now? You continue to be there, sinking all the time, drowning all the time. Understand now? And not being able to cross. Understand now? Not being able to come across, come over. Understand now? Overcome that. This way. Kriti mahodadhav patana karanam. Kriti mahodadhav patana karanam. And not only this is Phalam ashashvatam. And phalam, the karma can produce phalam what? Not shashvatam phalam. Shashvatam is everlasting, eternal, shashvatam. Tamil are good, this word, shashvatam. Shashvatam phalam is moksha. What is shashvatam in this universe? What is shashvatam here? What is eternal? What is permanent here? What is everlasting? What is that which is beginninglessly, endlessly, changelessly? Is there one thing? That is fullness, nirevu, that is the very reality, that is the meaning of the word I. That is what is Swarupma of Ishvara, the whole. The truth of the whole. Shashvatam is only one thing, that is Bhagavad Swarupam, which is Atma Swarupam. Apart from that, everything is what? Ashashvatam. Karma, ashashvatam. Karma phalam, ashashvatam. Understand now? And then phalam, this karma can produce only, not shashvatam, shashvataha moksha. Understand? Ashashvatam phalam only it can produce. Phalam ashashvatam gati nirodhakam. Then it's gati nirodhakam. Gati not only that, it obstructs. It always, it becomes an obstacle in accomplishing moksha. Understand? How much Shastram does not say don't do karma. Shastram keeps you, Shastram always keeps you in samsara. There is no way of discovering moksha which is already there just by doing karma. All your focus is only in doing karma. All your attention is only in accomplishing fruits which are time bound in nature. There is no way of turning attention towards the everlasting, the timeless reality, because there's no way of discovering it, there's no way of becoming free. It gati nirodhakamna. Gati here means what? Medana gati is moksha, isn't it? Nirodhaka means it's an obstruction, okay? It is an obstacle. It blocks your way to moksha. It's a blocking, in fact. It blocks your way to moksha. Gati nirodhakam. It obstructs your way to moksha. If it is not understood properly. Gati karma, he talks about karma. Karma is gati nirodhakam. Mere performance of karma without having any purushartha nischaya, without knowing the value of knowledge, the karma itself what now? Gati nirodhakam. Now it obstructs your path, way to moksha. It obstructs or blocks your way to moksha. Gati. There's a gati, no? Gati is ultimately what you have to discover is moksha that you will never discover. It because always the karma obstructs. Why? It keeps you in samsara. Why? Because all your attention is, it is taken away by karma and the karma phalam. There's no way of attention being turned towards the reality. So, gati nirodhakam, it puts in ashashvatam phalam, and then samsara sagare patana karanam. It becomes cause for falling, into samsara. This is what is karma. Therefore, if this is so, that means, then the question may come, do you want us not to karma at all? Does Ramana Maharishi say, don't do karma. All of you go and sit and meditate. Know the self and meditate upon the self. Immediately discover moksha. Does he say that? No. He says, come on. But knowledge alone is opposed to ignorance. Because dvo viruddha dharma, two things of opposite nature, cannot coexist. Like light and darkness cannot coexist, knowledge and ignorance cannot coexist. In the presence of one, other thing cannot be there. Therefore, whereas karma and ignorance are not opposed to each other. Where karma cannot remove ignorance. Whereas knowledge being opposed to ignorance, knowledge alone can dispel ignorance. Ignorance goes, ignorance born. I told you one sentence. Remember that? Kundodu Kailasam. Remember that now. Kundodu Kailasam means what? Once ignorance is dispelled, along with the ignorance, all ignorance caused problems will disappear. you will have to search for where is the problem, where is the ignorance, what is that? You have to search for it, it seems. Amazing. How beautiful it is, no? There is some Upanishad we talk about Ananda Surupam, Ananda Kalipu, what is that, you know? Some very beautiful, wonderful expressions. We'll see that later. So now what he says is, you see, everything will simultaneously kundod. Understand now? Not first it goes, okay, first you go, then I go, first Adhyasa goes, Ajnanam goes, the next Adhyasa, next Adhyaropa. Not like that. Simultaneously, all of them together disappear. Understand now? That is what is kundod. I like that word, kundod kailasam. Okay. Onna kaanam poiduvaanga. All the Rakshasas are dim, no? One Brahmasram is just, one Brahmasram comes. All the demons are checked. Already like, you know, the Devi Mahatma is presented, no? The Rakta Bija Vadaha comes. Devi, no, first Mahishasura, all these Madhuketabha, different things, these problems, emotional problems are personified as all Rakshasas. Actually, not outside, my God. Our all lack of clarity can produce any amount of demons, Rakshasas. No, the Rakta Bijaha, the Disail is personified as Rakta Bija, a demon. Rakta Bija is the name of a demon. Rakta Bijaha means what? Raktam eva bijam yasya. For the person, for the desire to be there, okay? The way desire fulfilled is enough for other desire to come. It can never be destroyed. Okay, desire is fulfilled. Okay, God, no. And there's one drop of blood falls, no? And another Rakta Bija comes. And 100 drops of blood fall from his body, 100 Rakta Bijas come. All of them come to fight against Devi. And she chose the Brahmastram, okay? Orastram. All of them as. That is why, Devi came also angrily. Then he says, Dvitiya ka mama apara. Dvitiya ka mama apara. Where is the second one other than me? Come on. Everybody dissolved, disappeared. It's a very beautiful. We had to say one day the story of Devi Mahatma. Because I want to understand all these things together, which will really enhance your understanding. Therefore, what I'm saying here, that is why this, once ignorance is dispelled, then along with ignorance born adhyasa, all everyone is demon, okay? Adhyasaha, ahankaraha, asha, avashyakata, asha, and asa karma, gone. Ahankara goes means, even the punya papa will dissolve, disappear. You know, agami has gone, sanchitam has gone. The owner is not there. Karan vangi asami illai. So karan has been cancelled. What can the bank do? The person died. Okay? He took a lot of loans. Now they can't come and claim from the children who are already beggars on the road. Understand now? The person is disappeared no more. So who can they go and sue the case against? Bank. Understand now? Like that agam hanchita will disappear. Paradham also is exhausted, over, free. Muktaha. Understand now? That is why this is ignorance has to be exerted, this thing. Ignorance alone has to be gone. Ignorance has to be dispelled. Knowledge alone is needed here. But for that jnanam, are you ready? You are not ready. Until this mind has become ready for the jnanam, you have to do karma. Non-performance of actions will not free you from bondage, will not help you discover moksha. Performance of actions also will not help you discover moksha. Understand? Performance of karma will keep you ever bound, ever remain bound in samsara. Understand now? Whereas non-performance also will keep you bound only. You have performance of karma with the proper attitude, by preparing your mind for jnanam, can serve as an indirect means for moksha, discovering helpfulness. Nareva. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Thank you. Oh, that's it.